My next guest is one of Australia's preeminent songwriters, Steve Kilby. He's written, I think, about 800 songs. The band The Church has some of the greatest Australian song titles to its credit. Steve is the author of those. He joins me now. I'd like to ask him what he's doing, in fact, in this period of coronavirus, how he's keeping busy, and joins me on the line now. G'day, Steve. How are you?
Hey, Adam. I'm sort of going up and down with the rest of the population. I'm trying to keep busy, but there's a certain fatalism behind everything I do, whereas, for example, I'm working on a script with a writer in America, and, I feel like this script we're writing might be for never be able to even have a shot of getting made. You know, there may not be anything on the other side of this where there's, you know, films and record labels and concerts and things out the other side. Who knows?
Is it 800 songs now, I think? You must be close to that.
It's getting close to 1,000. I've got a couple of albums at least waiting in the wings, waiting to come out. And I've got 3 albums. The new Church album, a new album I've done with the classical guitarist Gareth Koch, and that's a brand new one that we worked on a couple of weeks ago, and an album I've done with Glenn Benny of the Underground Lovers. So those 3 albums are waiting for things to come back to ha-ha normal.
How does a creative person relate to this time at the moment? I think traditionally creative people have been, I guess, almost in their element at difficult times, producing songs that are about morale, about meaning. Do you see it in those terms?
I'm not going to write songs about coronavirus. I'm not going to write. I don't write topical songs about what's going on at the moment. I've never been able to do that. I'm not very good at that.
Because you write the music first, don't you?
Yeah, the music always comes first, and then the lyrics. But even so, you know, I'm dipping into this human subconscious. I'm writing songs that are about human things that don't have anything to do with what's going on in politics or economics or on the world stage at any one particular point in time. I'm writing from a bigger perspective than that. It's not my gift to be a political or rebellious or rabble-rousing songwriter.
Right.
I write about more sort of esoteric things than that.
No, fair enough. Probably your best known song, and I know it's a song that you've got a slightly ambivalent relationship with, Under the Milky Way, seems to me at this moment to capture the oneness of people under the Milky Way, and that's certainly how I take it. I guess you can't control how people analyse and interpret your songs.
I just make them ambiguous so everybody can enjoy them and you can do whatever you like with them. And I'm happy if people go, I'm listening to Under the Milky Way, it reminds me we're all in this boat together. I think that's fantastic. But that obviously, when I knocked that song out back in 1985 or 86 or 87, whatever it was, that was not my intention.
Can I ask what the intention was?
Just to write a song. It's just a song. It's like I'm a songwriter, so I write songs. Songs that I enjoy. I mean, what's a song like Glass Onion about by John Lennon? You know, looking through the bent back tulips, seeing how the other half lives, looking through a, you know, glass onion. I don't know what that meant to him. It doesn't really matter. It's what it meant to me and the feeling it gave me. You know, my favorite songs, I can't even put into words what they mean to me. They just mean something in some wordless sort of realm. You get this feeling of it.
Listen, I first saw you play, I think it was in 1985, Mitchell College, Bathurst, where I was a student. You got the Church came and played, and you were just impossibly remote. Like, it was like David Bowie had turned up at our campus, you know.
And boy, I would have been pleased to hear that.
Yeah. But that was even before Under the Milky Way, I'm pretty sure. So the Church is still evolving. Where is it going?
The Church is, as you probably know, the Church is just me now. With all of those guys that you would have seen on that stage are no longer with me. Richard Plugue, Marty Wilson Pike and Peter Coppice have gone off to do their own thing. And I've got a new bunch of cohorts. Tim Poles on drums, who's been there since 1993. Ian Hogue on guitar from Powderfinger. He's been there since 2013. Jeffrey Kane from Alabama, and he was an American band called Remy Zero. He's been playing with us for 3 years. And Ashley Naylor joined last year, who's a Melbourne guitar slinger. He was in a band called Even. I think the Church have created a sound, a feeling, and we've got a huge body of work, like 30-odd albums. So the Church now exists to play those old albums and to keep moving forward, creating new music within the kind of what I always envisaged. Before I even met Peter, Marty and Richard, you know, there was once a guy on his own plotting this. What would my band be like? 1980, we formed the Church, and the Church endured and went on and made all those records. And I think the Church is now bigger than any one person leaving. And it's an original body of work. So it's not like anything else. And I want the band to remain extant. And I want to be able to play those old songs and play the new songs. And I'm going to go on doing it.
Yeah.
Until I drop dead. And then if the Church was sufficiently popular that there was enough demand that people said, we will want that, even though this guy's dead, I give it my blessing. Get another singer in and keep going.
Why not? You've kept writing for the Church and the other brands, if you like, that you perform under. But people always want to go back to those very well-known songs, Under the Milky Way, An Unguarded Moment. What's your relationship with those songs like?
Well, not everybody does. Okay. Not everybody wants to go back to that. You know, in America, the only song they really know is Under the Milky Way, An Unguarded Moment and Almost With You, and the other ones don't mean that much to them. And even in America, you know, sometimes when you play Under the Milky Way, people are like, oh, no, why do you have to do this one? Yeah, as you said, I have an ambivalent relationship. I'm thankful those songs stood out and they were hits and, you know, people went out and bought the albums. But, you know, people who really like the Church and the people who turn out when we tour America and Europe and stuff to see us, they're not there to hear Under the Milky Way, you know, only. They want to hear all the other stuff. And if you read, you know, the numerous Church pages and people discussing stuff and all the stuff that's going on, you know, they're not talking about Under the Milky Way for the last 20 or 30 years. You know, they're talking about the whole damn 30-album catalogue.
I love hearing it. To me, it's just as fresh now as when I heard it all those years ago. It just seemed to capture, again, that unity under the Milky Way right now, not just Australia, but the whole world.
Then great.
Yeah.
There, you've got it. You've got it. It's always there. You can always stick it on and listen to it.
And we're going to do that right now, Steve, as we play Under the Milky Way. We'll get to your drug use shortly, Steve, but I just wanted to ask you, do you see yourself like Bob Dylan as on some kind of endless tour?
I think I do. This is my vocation. My vocation is to be a songwriter, a musician, a singer, to go around playing my songs. You might as well walk up to a carpenter on building a house and go, why are you doing that? And he'd go, I'm a carpenter. That's what I do. I cut bits of wood and I hammer it together and I construct houses. And the same for me. I can't stop. I don't want to stop. It would be wrong for me to stop. And unlike a lot of guys in their mid-60s when it comes to music, I haven't frozen. I'm still creating. I think I'm quite a maestro now. I'm quite a maestro at writing songs. I'm not going around playing my three big hits and nothing else. I'm constantly branching out, collaborating with different people. Obviously, I'm never going to have another big hit again.
You never know.
It would be highly unlikely. Not many people come back in the charts at 65.
I guess.
Not that there are charts anymore or any of that. That's all gone. But I've been playing bass for 50 years, writing songs for 50 years. I hope I can keep improving.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
Okay, look at the Eagles. Incredible musicians, incredible songs, but they just go around reproducing the songs from that people want to hear, those big, you know, their big 10 hits. And you'll hear Hotel California and you'll hear Take It Easy and all of that. But they've sort of stopped making new stuff. You know, it's no longer part of their purview is to create new music. But that isn't mine. Mine is to play the old stuff and to keep creating new stuff. I don't think my best work is behind me. Maybe my most popular work is behind me. Even if only 20 people ever hear it, those 20 people are going to love the pants off it.
Well, it's quite inspiring, Steve. Quite inspiring, because a lot of people, you know, run out of juice eventually, and they just go back on the back catalogue.
No, I won't run out of juice, and I won't. I will never rely on the back catalogue. When people say to me, writer's block, I say, I don't know what that is. I've never had it. I'm never blocked. It's the opposite for me.
There was a time when drugs were a significant muse for you.
Yeah.
What's the relationship with drugs like now?
So I find marijuana is containable. You can get really out of it. You can get in touch with your muse or the collective unconscious or the universe, but you're still stable enough to get it all down and make some sense of it. I made the mistake of thinking that the opiates were in the same category. And I tried to harness heroin and opium. And for a while, for a honeymoon period, heroin and opium helped me write the best Church album ever, which was Priest Equals Aura in 1991. But of course, you can ride marijuana your whole life. Look at William Nelson. He's still doing, you can't be a junkie forever. And it'll turn on you and bite you on the ass. I was writing a lot of songs because of heroin. It went to, I was writing songs to spite heroin. And heroin almost closed the whole show down. And in the end, it had nothing to do with creativity. I wasn't getting any creativity out of it. I was just surviving. And music, for the first time in my life, music was the last thing I was interested in. I wasn't interested in anything else. I wasn't interested in music or sex or social life or anything. All I wanted was my next fix. It became the question and answer to everything was just heroin. So that was a mistake I made. Obviously, that all ended in tears. And spectacularly, the year 2000, I returned to Australia clean, broke. I had a bag with a pair of underpants and some books, and I returned to Bondi, and that's all I had, and stayed with my brother. And then I had to piece it all back together again. Starting over, it had stripped me of everything I had. I'm still wallowing in the wake of what heroin did to me. I lost my home. I lost all my guitars. I lost my recording studio. I've lost a lot of people's respect. I lost my burgeoning career as a producer. I lost everything to it because I underestimated it and thought, oh, I can ride this horse.
Yeah, I guess your honesty and self-reflection about it has allowed you to start again and to go back to and not be self-conscious or guilty and just get back into it, which is what you're doing.
I was extremely foolish, reckless. I flushed it all down the drain. And when it was all over, I had to find a reason for that. And I looked at myself and went, I'm a better guy than I was before I started heroin. It took all the rough edges off me. And
knocked some Juco off you, off the shiny mudguards.
As they used to say at my school, it took me down a peg or two.
Yeah.
It really did. And I found out how the other half were living. So, you know, 20 years ago, I came back to Australia and still started all over again. And now I'm sort of perceived as a sort of a battle-scarred old veteran who's been around the block. People sort of admire just for my sheer persistence. And I'm sort of, you know, I'm sort of one of the last men standing now. There are not many left.
Well, Steve, thanks very much for opening up to us about your life and I guess the darker side of it. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Okay, mate.
That was Steve Kilby of The Church on the Night Shift on Triple M. I wonder, he talks a lot about his creativity and the use of drugs to achieve it. What about you? Do you see drugs and alcohol playing, I guess, a role in your life in opening up your creativity? Give us a call and let's talk about it. 133 53. This is The Night Shift on Triple M.